This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 764, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are wearing their masks, washing their hands, all the stuff. Please do all the stuff until we don't need to do all the stuff. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week. This is episode 764. I am Josh Flanagan. This is Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
There's a little part of me was like, let's just keep doing this. See how long we can go. We are iFanboy. Every week we read our stack of comics. One of us picks the one that they like best. We call that the Pick of the Week. We inaugurate a new president. Well, we don't do that every week. That's just,
well, you and I also are not involved in that process.
Yeah, but let
directly,
me tell you.
Directly
involved. Well, that's a good point, too, but I'd say that could be part of the problem.
Maybe that is.
Let's find out what these Jamokes have to say about things. And then they get us two desks and two cigars. And then we get down to the business of doing things.
Exactly. We'd be great backroom men.
I don't really want to smoke the cigars, nor do I want to be in a room with somebody doing it. But besides that, what if they're like like candy cigars? We talk about that book, or pretzel rods. That's the way to do it. That's how an 80s kid did it. We talk about that book. We talk about other books. We talk about the patron pick. We answer some listener mail if we have time. We have fun, and thank goodness for it, by the way. This is always a pick-me-up.
Weekly therapy. Welcome to weekly therapy.
It's true. It's like scream therapy, but it's like nerd therapy. Here's your spoiler warning. There will be some. If you haven't read the books, we you know what? That's a courtesy. Someone asked, why do you always do that? Because we're nice people. That's why.
Try.
Connor, you had the pick this week.
I did. And man, why couldn't we have started with this week coming out of the gate? This was a great week of comics.
I had some fun.
I still have like 30 books from the break I haven't read. And I had to read a couple of those this week. And I enjoyed the ones I read from the break. I just really enjoyed comics this week.
Good.
And it was interesting. I enjoyed comics, and then I got down to it, and I didn't know what to pick. I didn't think about it for too long, but I didn't have like an immediate front runner. There was a bunch of books I really liked, and I could have made a case for all of them. So I read a couple of extra books. I read the patron pick, And then I read some books that were also patron pick votes that didn't win. Mm-hmm. And one of those books was Crimson Flower, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kent, drawn by Matt Lesniewski, colors by Bill Crabtree. And I really liked it. It's so weird. But I really enjoyed it. And it was so different and unusual. And I was just on a comic high. And I kept going back and looking at the pages and the strange, surreal art. And I really liked the story. And I was like, you know what? That's a pick of the week. Did you read this or is it just me?
I did. I read it this morning before we started.
I know you're not a huge Matt Kent.
Well, that's my question. Where are you on the Matt Kent?
I'm not like a huge Matt Kent fan. I've certainly read books that he's done and I've liked them. He did a Black Hammer miniseries that took place during World War II that I really liked. I've read stuff here and there. I'm not like one, you know, there's like a Matt Kent person who like loves everything he does. I'm not one of those people, but I don't dislike his work.
I don't dislike it, but I really have struggled to get into it. I haven't been able to grab on to most of what I've read of his. I don't know, it's something about tone or just his aesthetic. You know, not bad. I don't like hate it, but it just doesn't attract me all that much. I like going back every once in a while and reading stuff by somebody who I have had my, you know, judgments and preconceived notions about and saying, well, does this still hold true? And that's benefited us in the past. I think you can see I thought that about Matt Fraction, but then you go back and you read some stuff he did and it's great, and there's others too. I can see why you would have liked this. I think so. I'll go.
This story takes place in Russia. And it's about a woman who is a pharmaceutical rep who has mental issues that we're not clear on. It might be schizophrenia. It's hard to tell. And as the story unfolds, we find out that her father was murdered in front of her eyes when she was a kid. And she's on a quest to find who did it.
I gotta say, at the beginning, you see this girl. She goes into her father's study. She has a book. It's nice. They cut to her in the future. She talks about how she's a pharmaceutical rep in Russia. And I thought, that's a pitch that not a lot of people are going to get through. this is not a movie pitch. This is a comic book by a person who wants to make a comic book.
And so she's, you know, she goes to, you know, a doctor to pitch her wares, and he's leering at her, and we see him briefly as a wolf, and I don't, you know, either that's just a representation or that's her mental illness. And then she attacks him because he's got information that she needs about, you know, possible killer, and she goes to confront that person. Turns out to be a government assassin who did not kill her father, but may or may not have information to help her. And I liked, first of all, it was
also
very
kind of a prick.
Huge prick. And it was happy he died, but very unusual kind of story. Yes. You know, Russian pharmaceutical rep bent on revenge is not our normal comic book reading.
Who's hallucinating most of the time.
Yeah, constantly hallucinating. Sees herself sort of in the beginning, she's a kid reading Slavic folktales. So she sees herself sort of as a Slavic folk hero in some of it. And I really loved the Matt Lesniewski's surreal comics with an X art a lot.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I haven't read a comic looks like this in a long time. Certainly not published by one of the, you know, people at the front of Diamond.
Yeah, there's a panel here that I put on an Instagram channel that where she kicks the door open on the assassin and he just goes flying and he's just like all spindly limbs and his beard's flying everywhere and his gas mask and I just stared at that panel for a long time because it's just, you know, it's not for everyone, and this comic is certainly not for everyone, and I felt kind of bad picking it only because I know there are some people who listen who buy the pick to listen along with the show, and I know that some people will hate this book. Mm-hmm. But
I don't think it's a hateable book.
No, but if you're someone who doesn't like, you know, sort of outside of the mainstream stuff.
Well, I got to say that one of the things that I was impressed by is that a lot of times when things get surreal or, you know, characters are hallucinating or there's a dream thing, it becomes hard to follow. And I actually thought this was really well constructed in the sense that the storytelling was spot on, even though sort of visually and mentally the character was going places. I was never at a loss once. It was very clear. And I think that's a testament to those creators because that's hard to do.
Yeah, and the thing is, her hallucinations aren't like wildly inappropriate. You know, seeing the doctor as a wolf, you know, having this assassin tell her a story about some miners as the cave sort of builds around them. It was cool, but made sense within the story. Like, at first I was like, is that smoke? Like, what is happening? And then it was kind of cool how his story built into reality for her. And then, you know, at the end, as she's driving towards the next possible murderer, she is, you know, seeing herself flying on top of the car as the folk hero while she's driving. Like, all of it is contextually appropriate for her hallucinations or whatever's going on in her life. So it's not like there's not like a random duck walking through the scene, you know, it all makes sense. And
that's one of my favorite contextual arguments I've ever heard you make. That should be on the cover of the next issue. It's good. It's not like a random duck walking through.
It was just random duck. So I liked it for many reasons. I thought it was really enjoyable. I thought the art was terrific. I liked the story. I liked the idea of it. And I really want to know what happened next. I thought her character was really sympathetic and interesting. I felt for her as a kid when they flashed back to the murder, where she's sitting in that big comfy chair with her book, what we saw in the opening scene, that was so happy, and now she's spattered in her father's blood. It was very, I thought, disturbing.
That's not how you want to end a nice session reading a cozy book in dad's study.
No, she's in a nice, really nice. I was like, man, that's a great study. I'd love to read a book in that room. And then, of course, now it's spattered in blood. But
the fact that you don't have a high back leather chair is just insane to me.
I have a high back suede chair.
Yeah, but it doesn't make that sound.
No, it's not leather. One day. And the killer is just sort of perceived as this like sort of long limbed black, you know, wraith. Mm-hmm. And so I just really responded to this. I loved the scene with the guy, the possible murderer, the assassin, and his story was interesting. His miner's tale, and then their fight was great. It was a science fight. So, you know, I thought this was terrific. I really did. I just love. We don't often stumble upon really high quality books that we're not aware of. You know, it's not like Matt Kent's an unknown quantity. You know, he's a known quantity. But
do you normally check out his books when they come out?
Not. I only read this because it was like second or third in the voting for the patron pick. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, that's people are into this. I should see what it is.
You know, if the patrons are into that, then you don't have to feel bad that somebody's going to buy it and it. You wield your power with responsibility.
I try. I don't want anyone to be disappointed. But I really liked it. It's a crime tale with a little bit of a. See, it's not supernatural. You know, like
yes,
there was another book out this week that the patrons voted for that I looked up, and it was like. You know, reporter in the 70s uncovers corruption. I was like, oh, that's cool. And the supernatural beings. And I was like, nope, never mind. Mm-hmm. This was just like, it's a crime story with a woman with mental illness that manifests in hallucinations. And that's sort of your fantastic element, but it's not outside the realm of reality.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. I mean, the art is just wonderful. There's nothing that looks like this that I'm aware of right now.
No, you're absolutely right. And the combination of that art and the color, I thought was really well done too. It almost looks like the kind of thing where the artist would color themselves because it's very intermingled, I guess.
And
but in a sense of sort of those things organically working together. Actually, all three, color, art, and story, I thought. So yeah, I mean, I guess I was being a little glib at the beginning. Like I didn't love it. It's not my favorite kind of story, but it's a really good comic book.
I love that from the art standpoint, it's all very lived in. You know, like this guy's apartment is grimy and awful, and the floor is cracked, and there's holes in the walls, and there's some liquid leaking out of one crack. And it's just like you can see everything that's happening with the backgrounds. You know, the characters are revealed through the backgrounds, you know, and through the full lived-inness of the cave scene and the library and the hospital and the neighborhood the guy's living. I mean, there's no skimping in this book.
It's weird though, because I have been led to believe that in Russia everything is sort of greenish fluorescent colored. And as far as I know, every single thing that happened in both Soviet Russia and Russia after that has that same greenish pallor, you know,
right,
with a little flicker. But that might just be the Americans and Chernobyl. I don't know.
Well, they're not, as far as I know, irradiated, but maybe that's why she's having the hallucination.
Perhaps. It's...
One final thing I'd like to mention, the To Be Continued is hand-lettered, and I'm pretty sure the Dark Horse logo is hand-drawn on the cover.
Oh, that's the good stuff.
It looks like it. It might not be, but the issue one looks like it. I just love the feel of this comic, too. It felt like an entire piece that was thought through. And I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to more of it.
That's excellent. That's good stuff. I was glad to see a different thing, and I was actually glad to read a different thing. So that was good.
For a moment, not for a moment, it was until I read Crimson Flower that Deceased Dead Planet number 7 would have been the pick. I believe this is the final issue of the Deceased saga.
It felt like, and I think the other ones were like 7 issues also, which is unusual.
Oh, no, this is the final issue of this mini for sure. It's 7 right. 7. But,
oh, yeah. You know, there wasn't much to do.
This feels like the final issue of the saga. I mean, they've solved the crisis. Mm-hmm. The heroes saved the day. So, you know, when the original Deceased mini came out, we read it, we loved it, and then it ended, and they announced they were doing more. We were like, oh, man. But it turned out to be a terrific world that was built through several series, digital and also print. But this one wraps up the story, and it's going to be kind of sad to not have Deceased happening.
Totally. You know what I realized that this whole thing reminded me of as we were reading through this sort of, I don't remember how long ago, but it's been at least a year, if not more. It reminded me of when Batman books were in the Cataclysm and the Aftershock and everything, mm-hmm. where you just sort of entered this place and it was separate from everything, and it was really compelling. And, you know, there were challenges, and it was in the main continuity. So they had more, I guess, a little more consequences in the greater world. But for the most part, they were really self-contained. And the other comics were just like, well, that's going on over there. And that was kind of it. And so it sort of lived on its own. And this felt a lot like that because it was, you know, sort of driven by one person, you know, telling one story that really fit into the world that there was. Now, it's funny, at the end of this, as we'll find out, like, pretty much everyone was okay. You know, like,
well,
there are loose ends, though. Superman.
For sure. But there's also, like, you know, many people did die. You know, they couldn't vaccinate. Yeah. They couldn't save those who have been killed as zombies.
Vaccinate.
So, you know, there's a lot to do here. There's a lot of things to wrap up. The Batman and Superman have to stop Amazo. John Constantine and Satana have to stop Trigon. And then the rest of the heroes have to sort of get the cure out to as many people as possible as quickly as possible. So there's a lot happening, and it's a very fast wrap up, but I thought it was handled really well. It felt like a very epic ending, like almost like in the Return of the Jedi, where there's three things happening at once. This felt mm-hmm. very much like that. And I liked Constantine a lot in this.
Yeah.
I liked that he sort of took all the power of all the magical heroes. He's wearing Ragman's cloak and Dr. Fate's helmet, and he's got Dead Man's powers.
Madame
Xanadu's crystal, and he sort of becomes like the ultimate magical character, and he to take on Trigon, and he sacrifices his life to do that. I thought the scene with him and Zatanna, even though I don't like them as a couple, was very sweet when he was sort of fading away. Mm-hmm. I love this.
Tend to think of them as a couple. I tend to think of them like they've had, you know, they've had.
Well, they coupled them off in the Justice League Dark book for a bit.
Oh, okay. I always think of it like because they knew each other. Like they're like colleagues who've slept with each other once in a while, but really like each other. That's how I look at it.
And there's probably more of an emotional connection than John Wall. We're willing to admit, at least.
Yeah.
At least in the DC version of him. I love the bit with Superman and Batman where they had to save the day, and then Superman stopped to thank the sort of regular soldier guys.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrific.
I think one thing that I really appreciated in this issue was it's Trevor Hairston, yeah, obviously.
Yep.
There's a bit where when they're fighting Trigon, especially when John is, and boy, they really got the scale right.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually talking about this with Big Girls last week, but you know, like he steps on John at the end, but the Trigon body is not. It's just like it's just a giant sort of humanoid form. It's not cartooned out or monstery or anything.
Right.
He's red, but. And I just think it's really interesting. Like we see giant characters all the time, but like watching the actual physicality of like Superman fighting a giant. I feel like you don't see it all that often. It's always from a distance, you know.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, it's a nice metaphor also. You know what they're going up against. I like the fact that John knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew everything that was going to happen along the way, and he had the plan. And it really tells me that, in fact, Taylor was doing that miniseries with Derek Robertson that hasn't finished.
Yeah, the Hellblazer one hasn't finished yet. Yeah.
And, you know, but he clearly loves that character and has a good handle on him and found a way to integrate him into this in a significant way.
In a way that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally not. It wasn't like, I love this character and shoehorn him in, just like it totally made sense. And you know, he was who he is. You know, he's kind of a bastard, like not a good guy, you know, but everybody respects him in a certain way. There was also a line where, you know, Superman said, "You're a good guy." And he's like, "Means a lot that you said it to me. It's not true, but..."
It was just full of all the great little character moments that we've come to love throughout these books. And I'm looking at the page right now where Superman and Batman go to the Penguins sort of collective to get Professor Izzo. And the Penguin's like, "Fuck you guys. Guards kill him." And the guards are like, "I'm not shooting Superman. Like, who do you think we are?" Like it was just all like, you know, that was the bits that we love where, you know, like, don't be an idiot.
And then, but it's also a twist on the henchmen, because henchmen never do that.
Right.
You know, like it's just that little bit that makes it more special than the other comics.
Right. And the thing is, like, they're not your normal, it's not their henchmen. You know, it's not like they're hired goons. They're just soldiers who have aligned with Penguin, because what else are you going to do?
Well, they got hired and everything, but either way, I mean, it's just one step more of thinking like, how do we make this more interesting?
Right. And then he has a great conversation with the soldier and thanking him for not attacking them. And it takes a hero to stand up to people in power. It was full of great stuff, great art. And I was legitimately bummed when it was all, like, it was a great ending. Yeah. It was very sweet. It ended with Ollie getting the cure and, you know, kissing Dinah, which was, I'm sure, horrible zombie breath. But
there's your anti-life right there.
It was still very sweet, you know, that it ended on those two. And we've talked about a lot throughout this how great his Ollie had been,
and
how great they were as a couple. She's now Green Lantern, and it was nice. And again, it was a happy ending, even if they weren't all saved. There is tragedy in it.
Yeah, I do hope, I hope that the Tom Taylor gets this to be his thing that he does, the way that like Tom King gets to do his 12-issue maxi series, then Tom Taylor gets his own world for 2 years. You know, to do a bunch of stuff on. Like, I know he just got announced on a Batman book or something, right?
Yeah, he's on Nightwing, and he's doing a Batman miniseries.
Yeah.
The Batman miniseries used to be pretty much out of continuity. But,
and I'm sure
happy for him to be on main books. I'd love for him to do Superman. But, like, if they just wanted to keep giving him, like, here, just do another out of continuity two-year venture. You know, he did Injustice. He's doing this. Like, every couple of years, hey, you get, you know, that would be terrific.
Build your world, do your thing. Yeah, no, he's really great at that thing. I bet there's a lot of guys who would be really good at that. Some guys, you know, like Dan Slott needs to be on a regular, you know.
Build for it.
Yes, but some guys need to be outside of it to get the best out of them. So we'll see.
Well, you know, similarly to the Dead Planets sequels, we have Maestro, War and Pax number one, Peter David, Javier Pena. This is the sequel to the Maestro mini, which we really ended up loving.
Mm-hmm.
And I have mixed feelings. This issue was also great again, but my overall mixed feeling is eventually with prequels, you end up butting up against the original story eventually. Mm-hmm. If you keep going. I don't remember, because it was, you know, in the early 90s. I don't remember exactly when that story started in the story of Maestro, but you know, that's the concern anyway. It's not important to this particular issue, which I thought was a little ton of fun again.
Well, I don't know that story at all. So I'm just you know, doing this on its own. I love this. I've enjoyed it the whole time. Every time a new one comes out, I get more excited. And you know, sort of that last one ended, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, and then right away the next week. I mean, I read the other one last week. I don't know what the difference was, but you know, we're just keep going as if this is just another, you know, part of the series. Gorgeous art,
great art,
beautiful. Great art. I think it's a believable extension of a thing that could happen to Hulk and Banner.
Yeah,
you know, like he just is like, he's enough of the puny humans. I'm going to take over. This is stupid. I don't want to deal. You know,
and the thing is, like, I know you traditionally don't like the last page stinger character reveal, but man, when that happened, I was like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
which we'll get to in a second. So in this story, so the first mini was about
I know who that character is. So like I'm like I understand that it's when I don't know when I'm expected, you know. It worked here basically. That's
character
that's
you don't know or the Punisher. So yeah. The first mini was about Hulk Banner waking up and finding that the world had gone to hell and most of the heroes were dead and everything was messed up, and then running into Hercules, who is now calling himself the Maestro, running his little fiefdom and taking that over and becoming the new Maestro. That's how it ended, with him on the throne as Maestro. So here he's expanding his what he's calling his Pax, his basically his Rome. Mm-hmm. And so he gathers his forces to attack Washington, D.C., which is the citadel of another group of people. It's very Walking Dead-esque, run by Robot Man. Well, not run by Robot Man, but he's sort of their
administrator,
dispassionate leader.
He's the Lando Calrissian.
Right. And so this issue was all about the conflict between the, you know, his group coming and attacking, and then them fighting back. And then there's this whole side bit where we have these, who are these people? The gods?
Pantheon?
The Pantheon.
Yeah, they have god names. Ulysses and Delphi and...
Right.
I don't know.
I guess they're the Pantheon of the gods.
Something like that. But they're living it up in like they've gone on some sort of expensive vacation at a lake somewhere.
And they're living underneath the ice in the Arctic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which it's good to know there's still ice in the Arctic in the future.
There you go. And also, you know, say what you want, but there's nothing that humanizes a Hulk more than realize that he has a receding hairline. Right. Like gamma radiation can do a lot for you, but there's some things you can't cure.
And then at the end, you know, the stinger is there was a brief cameo or shot of this character earlier from the back, but the reveal is that Dr. Doom has showed up in the Arctic, so they're adding Doom to the story. And this is, we're going to talk about this again later with another book. This is a very classic Marvel. Peter David still got it. You know, for new readers, he might be a name. Might not be any people know, for people who have only come on in the last couple of years. But like for most of my life, he was one of the biggest comics writers in all of comics.
Yeah.
And his Hulk run is legendary. He's got many legendary runs under his belt.
And in that time, I do not feel, I really don't think he feels dated. I think he's doing, he does good work still. He had a massive, like, he had a stroke or something like that at some point. But he's still putting out really high quality work when they give him a chance to. And, you know, this is his wheelhouse, obviously. Going in here, this is, you know, a little bit of having a, I was going to use a baseball metaphor, but I was going to blow it, so I stopped.
Well, there's a baseball reference in the my point is, if you took his name off and put a random name on, I'd be like, oh, who's this new writer?
Yes.
This writer's terrific. Because this is great. I'm looking forward to it.
Here is, I'm going to introduce a concept, and yeah. I think it's going to come back at least once more in this show. But what we have here is good old superheroes. This is good old superhero comics, or gosh. Yeah. It's a gosh system. Good old superheroes.
Oh.
We've got that. That's right. Might be a t-shirt someday.
Interesting.
Good old superheroes. It's very high on the gosh scale. Now it's outside of, you know, continuity. It's not taking place in the ongoing book, but this is like, I think Kirby would look at this and go, "That's great."
Whoa! Sorry, you blow my mind. I'm trying to think how the gosh scale works. I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, that's the thing I've noticed, that over time, you know, I have moved. I don't know if it's left or right, you know, but, you know, initially it wasn't my favorite thing. And the further we go into this, I don't know that that's always my favorite thing, but I really like it a lot now.
Well, especially with the impetus, and it's definitely true at Marvel, where they sort of shy away from that a lot in the main books. It's like all the villains are either, you know what, let's wait and bring this back up with another book because it's relevant to another book.
Yes, it is.
Rorschach number 4, Tom King, Jorge Fornes, Dave Stewart, Clayton Cowles. So I think I had read 3 and 4.
Me too.
I didn't read 3 over the break. And so we're in that fourth issue Tom King zone where it's like we still aren't quite sure what's happening, but we're starting to learn things.
Yeah. Yeah. This last one was sort of the origin of this is Tulip. This is Tulip showing up from Preacher is in this one.
I really like this one. I love this as a character piece. The whole issue is the cop. He's a cop, right?
Or, you know, an investigator.
interviewing this circus strongman who got pulled into the web of the Kid, which is the name for the young woman who died in the first issue with Rorschach. And as a character piece, as like a one-shot story, I thought this was terrific. The art, obviously the art was great, but like the story of this strange couple, and they weren't a romantic couple, although he was in love with her, but the strange couple from the circus who end up their lives sort of spiraling out of control as she manipulates this guy to start helping her with her crime. Mm-hmm. He becomes this giant, jacked, strongman Rorschach who goes around killing people. And also it sort of played into the, obviously it's Tom King, the zeitgeist of today about where he's a conspiracy theorist about the Watchmen and mm-hmm. that they're all not dead. They were not killed by Dr. Manhattan or whatever. They're retired. He vaporized their human bodies, but sent their souls to live in other people. Mm-hmm. So she has been searching for the person whose soul inhabits Rorschach. Now, obviously, that's ridiculous, but it's part of the sort of conspiracy feeling that permeates the world right now, our world and this world.
And it also was in Watchmen 86. I mean, that was definitely part of it. You know, there's a lot of parallel here. Yeah. You know, there's a long... I don't know if it's an interrogation, but there's the psychologist who sits in the room with Rorschach, you know, and that's mm-hmm. going on here. And it's interesting because this guy is also Rorschach, air quotes, you know, but he's a whole different, he's coloring the whole time. And I like the idea is that he's actually sort of just a sweet, simple person without
godlike, yeah.
Without like sort of the morals that would guide what you're doing. He's just like the lady was good and she wanted me to do it, so I did it. But one thing that sort of undercuts that is the fact that he has that immaculately groomed mustache, and it's like I feel like that guy that they're portraying wouldn't have that, but it is a good mustache. I'll give him that.
I think he'd have the mustache. I don't know if he'd have the soul patch.
Yeah, well, but the mustache wouldn't look at Al. He's got it groomed out to little points, like a literal comic book villain.
Yeah, or a pirate, which is you know
that's
whole,
a good point too.
The whole world is pirate, you know. Instead of superheroes, they got pirates.
It really was. It was a hell of a reach.
Actually, sorry, his hair looks exactly like the character he's coloring.
Yeah.
The Pontius. No, who is it?
Pontius Pirate. Yeah. I think that it was really interesting to you know take a character who is utterly guileless, but also you know has killed a bunch of people and has no remorse about it. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, he's sweet. He's a killer. Yeah, but he's sweet. You know, like I think the last two issues were, I was not looking forward to number three. I was like, all right, see what happens. Because it just hadn't, and the last couple, I thought, okay, I kind of see where we're going here. And they gave me something to grab onto. I kind of understand this investigator guy now. I kind of, mm-hmm. you know, I see a direction, and I didn't see a direction, which we knew was going to happen, but, you know.
I mean, what this guy does is horrible, all the murder, but I did laugh at the scene where he tosses the guy down the elevator shaft, only mm-hmm. because the guy was so pompous mm-hmm. and he was talking all these big, you know, I've got all these powerful men behind me in Washington. You can't do anything to me. You can't touch me. And he goes, wait, what do you do? Like, it was just, he didn't care one bit about what this guy was saying.
Cathartic.
I mean, it's horrible, but it was just kind of the way it was structured was very funny.
It should not go unsaid that, boy, Jorge Fornes is a talent.
He's my favorite new artist to come along in a while.
I mean, he really, he's got the thing. And I think that we're moving past the Mazzucchelli clone, you know.
Oh, for sure.
That there's certain guys.
You can see it here.
Yeah. Oh, it's there, but it's not.
No, I mean, we can see that he's developing a style here as opposed to when he first came on doing Batman, it was basically Mazzucchelli. Now, great. I was all for it, but.
If you're going to copy anybody, you know, that's a great guy to copy, but you know, he's
developing his own thing here.
And you know, Dave Stewart never hurts in that respect ever.
No,
but, it really wonderful, you know, it's the same. It's similar to, Gary Frank on that other Watchmen book is that, you know, evoking the spirit of the Watchmen books, but without aping it, I think.
Right.
And also in a style that fits with their own style.
Oh yeah, I mean this—he's not at all doing Dave Gibbons, but it's. No.
But the layouts have you know they're hints of it, but it's just not—it's not too much. I think it's really it's a nice line.
It fits.
Yep,
it's a piece.
Let's move along to this part where we mention the ways that you can become involved with and help out this little endeavor that we have taken on at iFanboy. You could get yourself, I'm gonna move through this because I think people know the spiel. You can get over to patreon.com/iFanboy where you can people have unlocked shows and they saved shows from the precipice of being relocked, which is working out for you.
I hadn't done that Mediasplode that came out this week. I bet. Which was so much fun to do.
It was fun. They're super fun to do. We might just do them on our own and record them and then not give them
to
anybody.
This particular Star Wars related one, which we'll talk about at the end of the show, but man, that was a fun conversation.
It's absolutely true. So you got the Talksplode, you got your Booksplode, you got your Mediasplode, you got YouTube content going up there, you have the monthly patron hangouts. There's a lot of good reasons to become a patron of iFanboy over at patreon.com/iFanboy. There's also the Discord server and the patron Facebook group. Good. It's sort of a return of community for us, which I think is really fun too. Over at ifanboy.threadless.com, there are 8 designs that were nominally for t-shirts but can be put on other products if you so desire. There's some real winners in there, I think, of those. There's the Stay Home and Read Comics, which you should still be doing. A portion of all those sales will still go to the Comic Book United Fund. We have donated them a not insignificant amount of cash, which I feel good about, and you should too. There's ifanboy.com/support, where you will find a PayPal link if you don't want to deal with any of that stuff, and that's what you feel like doing. We could think of that like a tip jar at the coffee place. Had a coffee moment there. ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can go to buy the books that we talk about in our Booksplodes. You can always find a link to the pick of the week there, and there's a general link for Amazon since going to stores is just outright insanity at this point. Although you should try to support those people in the way that you can, in a way that is safe. You should have a mix of retail experiences. That's what I believe. And thank you to everybody who has contributed in any of those on your way. And, you know, even just you, common Joe listener out there, Joe and Jill listener. Hey, wait, I didn't realize that. That's the Bidens. They both have completely normal names. Anyway.
The point is this. I'm into some people for a lot of money, and there's some serious folks. So
they're gonna take my toe. I gotta give credit because you know it's always great to explain a joke. I'm into some people. That's fantastic. And then the very underplayed. They're serious people. these guys.
They're serious guys.
They don't play around.
Yeah, I like all my limbs intact. But thank you for everyone who supports the show. We do appreciate it. It does keep the show going, pays the bills, and allows us to do more shows, more for you, and we enjoy doing all of them.
I mean, I think we should just come clean with it. We are both degenerate gamblers.
Right, yeah.
And we're not good at it.
You think after all these years I'd stop. But
this whole show is a front.
Right.
That was our brilliant plan.
That's how I pay our gambling bills. Podcast about comics.
You know what we should do? We should start a podcast about comics for years.
I'll keep playing craps.
It was a gamble in its own. This will pay off. Don't you worry.
So speaking of paying off, Legion of Superheroes number 12. This is the final issue. Brian Bendis, Ryan Suk did the whole thing. Wade Von Grawbadger helped him ink it, and Jordi Belair, Dave Sharp. Now, I know you dropped off this book.
I keep picking them up every once in a while because I can't remember if I dropped it off and got back on. So I think I read halfway through this one and thought I got no idea, so I stopped.
Right, and the thing is, like, I don't know. I can't tell you this series ultimately really successful. I thought it was a very strange book.
Yes.
But I liked it, and I liked that it existed.
Okay.
I feel like it's an experiment that Bendis was doing. It didn't quite work. It got too muddled. It was never really focused, but every couple of issues I'd really like it, and I liked the camaraderie he built up with the team. You know, Bendis is a team.
Yeah,
it's his like specialty. He can obviously do solo heroes. He's done a ton of them, but he's very good at team books. And this was maybe too sprawling.
It was maybe too big. There should be a limit on how many characters you give this guy.
But I did really enjoy it, and I like this final wrap up issue in which the team came together to save the day. Even if it involved Rogal Czar, which I think is the worst idea that Bendis brought to the table and should not have happened.
And a boring design.
Boring design, just but really just mucked up the Superman mythos. But anyway, the fact that the Legion came together, put their differences aside, Mon-El put his pride down and teamed up with Jonathan to defeat him, and Dr. Fate, like all the, it just was, ended up being a fun wrap up, and I liked it. There was a little mystery at the end, which they may or may not ever explore again, but
it's really interesting that Bendis on Superman has like we enjoyed the books for the most part, and I think
they're good.
Especially the first
year.
But you know, left some really shitty marks. Like, you know, you've got the Rogel Czar thing. You have Superman revealing his identity. If those comic books hadn't been really fun to read, I feel so strongly for them, because I don't like anything that happened. But that's the thing.
Yeah. Let's not get into that for right now. But let's talk about Batman Catwoman number 2, Tom King, Clayman. Is this coming out monthly? I don't know.
Ish.
I'd say.
It's not biweekly.
Are you still reading it?
Yeah, I read this one. I liked it more than the last one, but I'm not sure what it is, and I'm not sure that I love it.
It's a strange, you know, it's what we talked about before. It's a strange, now out of continuity story, and
it does feel very epilogue-y, you know, instead of just sort of going from that Batman book to going into this, you know, these issues to just continue or finish the story. It feels like it is a different thing, you know, a continuation of, and I think that that's good structure.
Yeah, it's a weird hybrid, because, you know, it was meant to be supposedly in the regular Batman books, but it was moved off into its own Black Label miniseries, and it takes place half in the future and half the present, I guess, or even more in the future than the present. But and certainly it's starting to involve the character from Mask of the Phantasm, the woman that looks like the Grim Reaper, but it's not. So I like you, don't know exactly where this is going either, but I've been enjoying it. I love Clayman. I just really love everything he drew. And this ties into the Porky's bar that Tom King introduced in that Looney Tunes crossover. Mm-hmm. So it's all just sort of, he's getting to play with everything he sort of brought to the table in Gotham. This is his sort of love letter to the animated series, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
I really do love the design of old Joker.
And old, I was retired.
I also have mixed feelings on him sort of like coming back out as a killer in this, meaning that like I kind of liked the idea that he'd actually retired. I'm done with all this. But of course, that makes no sense for the character.
Yeah.
I just thought, I think it's funny. I mean, he shouldn't be allowed to do that. And of course, he shouldn't be Joker. He's always going to be Joker. But it was fun for a little bit to imagine it that way.
Right.
It's good.
Yeah. So it's interesting. There's a lot. It's very much, we say it a lot with Tom King books, but we're very early. And that means we don't necessarily know what's happening here.
Yep.
But it tends to all make sense in the end.
Sure.
So Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon, written by Larry Hama and drawn by David Wachter. And this is another one of those books similar to Hulk that I just loved as a classic Marvel comic. And
yes.
It's, you know, Larry Hama, again, if you're new to comics, may not be a name you know, but it's one of the most important names in comics in terms of its history.
I want to say 45 years or so. Of history in comics, like he's been around.
And held every kind of job and done every kind of thing you can do in comics. And so here we have an sort of out of continuity Iron Fist story that sort of takes place. You know, there's elements of newer stuff, like it's very much like a modern Power Man, but it's very much a classic Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on here. Like, I don't know who these you know, Pei and Fool are.
Gwildor.
But it doesn't matter. You know, you get enough information in the story to know what's happening. And what I wanted to talk about now, which I almost mentioned earlier, was that Marvel's tendency lately has been to take their villains and make them goofy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Taskmaster. I really am enjoying that Taskmaster miniseries, but it's goofy.
Yeah, sure.
It's the Matt Fractionization of the villains. And here we have a classic scary Taskmaster that reminded me of how I would feel as a kid when he would show up in the comics, where he was terrifying.
His mask is terrifying. Unstoppable.
Yeah, his mask is terrifying. His abilities are terrifying. the heroes can't dispatch him, mm-hmm. you know? So I was like, oh, it's scary Taskmaster, which mm-hmm. is so different than what we've been getting. Because again, Marvel takes their, you know, has Dr. Doom eating burritos in Queens and mm-hmm. Taskmaster's kind of a good goofy, good guy. And they've done that set with several of their villains. And this is higher on the gosh scale because it feels more like that. Like I feel like it should, you know.
It was very so for a little while. This was the front runner in the patron voting, and I had seen it and thought, well, I'll give that a flyer mm-hmm. anyway. But when I saw it was good, I'll definitely make sure to read it. And I loved it. This was actually the book that I coined gosh on. I was like, that is what you want. And it's interesting that the two guys who did those books this week are, you know, vets. There's Larry Hama and Peter David. Right. I was not excited about the fact that there was a Billy Tan cover on it. I instantly see Billy Tan's art, and I'm like, I don't like that. It's not my thing. But inside, Dave Wachter, that's a guy who has not done a lot of mainstream books. I've known him for a while because I used to see his stuff all the time when I would do SketchUp on the website. Great mm-hmm. artist, you know, does a lot of good pinups. I'm sure he's done some sort of smaller stuff, but boy, he was perfect for this. He was great. I loved the art in this book. I loved
yes.
Danny's face. I loved Luke Cage's face. The little whatever his name, the little Gwildor guy, you know, was fun. There's some really wonderful sequences, you know, action sequences, lots of dead ninjas. Really wonderful script. You would not guess that this is a, you know, not young writer. You know what I mean? Right. Like it was all the like this could have been my pick of the week. When I was reading, I thought I could totally make this pick of the week this week. You know, again, yeah. same reasons you said. There was I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know. It doesn't matter though. You just pick up and read a comic book exactly like you did when you were a kid. And I don't mean that this was childish. I just mean that we didn't have all that baggage when we were younger. And it's nice when books don't have to.
Yeah, and again, there's Lady Bullseye in this, and she's a character from the early 2000s. So this has all kinds of just sort of ragtag elements that are dropped into this stew pot, and you end up with a really fun action story in which some people are trying to kill all the mystical dragons in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. And since one of the Iron Fist's, you know, duties is to protect the dragon of Kunlun, he gets sort of called in to help, and it's not going well. And I thought this was great.
I like that, you know, this has a little more traction, but if you compare this story to the Shang-Chi story that's going on, you know, mm-hmm. where this is just a lot more successful because it's using a
yeah.
more familiar formula, I guess. Like there's a whole, you know, legacy and mythology behind this that I don't really understand, just like I don't the other, but it was fun. It was fun, and it was you know, like you can have the fun characters and you can have the arch villains at the same time, I think. It's good.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I do want to mention quickly Barb Alien, Red Planet number 3. I read 2 and 3 this week. It's just Tate Bromball and Jeff Lemire, who are the writers, and Gabriel Hernandez-Walter, the terrific artist who did the Vision series of Tom King. It's just them getting to explore, you know, the world of gay men during the AIDS crisis through the lens of superheroes. And is it Sky City, whatever the name of the fake city is. It's just a stand-in for San Francisco or New York, whichever neighborhood you want to or place you want to look at. But it's Spiral City. It's just it's been a terrific character piece. You know, there's a big alien fight here in which the Boa Boaz shows up finally to fight Mark Mars, the John Jones stand-in. But ultimately, it's really about the persecution. It's about how they have to go to special hospitals because no one will treat them. It's about how you know, they have to hide out and hide who they are and the conflict that comes out of that. So it's been, I think, a really beautiful little story. And the writing's been great, but a lot of it has to do with the Gabriel Hernandez-Walter art, who is just great.
I feel like I was too hard on that book, and I feel like I want to go back and finish it.
It's been really good. Mm-hmm. It has been really good. You know, all these Black Hammer books are really good, but I think this one has a lot more emotional resonance because it's sort of, I don't want to say based in fact, but based in the things that did happen in the sure. world at the time. And as Barb Alien, Mark Mars is sort of realizing that who he is as a gay man, alien character. It's been nice. It's been really nice.
Cool.
So.
Yes, let's patron pick it up. There was a last minute rally here. that the vote came through on Rain Like Hammer's number one from Image Comics, created by Brandon Graham, a sort of high test indie comics auteur who shows up every once in a while and drops a thing that gets people very excited. I had no idea what this was or what it was going to be.
Real quickly,
if
you're a first time listener, this is a patron pick, which is a book chosen by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. They vote to add a book to the rundown, and this week it was Rain Like Hammers, as Josh said. Mm-hmm. When's the last time you read a Brandon Graham book?
I don't know. There was a nice little list at the end where he was like, you can read all these other things. And I was trying to remember, let's see, multiple Warheads maybe?
And Prophet.
I didn't read that, though. Or I read like one of them. That was a long time ago, though.
It was a long time ago.
It was Brandon Graham, and I thought, okay, this could be really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I got it.
Yeah, but I did enjoy reading it.
I didn't get a lot out of it, and I wanted
to. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. But I did find it interesting. I think where I came out was I found it more interesting than good. And it clearly is good. I mean, there's clearly tons of talent here. Obviously, he. I think he draws really, really well.
Yeah,
and tells the story really, really well. But it's a very stylized. I mean, I guess because I read so much of Prophet, it's very similar structurally to Prophet, where you don't get a lot of information. You're sort of at a distance to the characters. There's a lot of little insert shots of things, and I don't really know what's happening here. It's a story set in some sort of truly dystopian world in which you live and work in your sort of ziggurat, mm-hmm. and you eat your protein cubes and you watch your shows and then you go back to work. And it's, you know, we're very much in, especially on the DC side, in this post-apocalyptic kick, but this is dystopian. Mm-hmm. And I found that interesting. I found the exploration of the world, the mechanics of the world, interesting, although I don't know what he was doing for his job.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I liked it. But I did finish reading it. I thought that was really interesting, and I'm glad I read it, but I don't know if I liked it. Does that make sense?
So what I think happened to me is that it felt a lot like reading Jimmy Corrigan. And when this was a long time ago, but when Jimmy Corrigan came out, it was lauded, you know, by sort of everybody who mm-hmm. had anything, you know, who had read it. And so I kept searching for the thing that would be the hook. And right. with Jimmy Corrigan, it feels a lot like this for a while, where I was like, I don't know what this is. This is just this sad little strangely drawn world, you know. And then it kind of does hit, it kind of did hit me, you know, where I was like, oh, okay, I see it. And I kept waiting for it to come into focus here, mm-hmm. and it hadn't yet. So, yeah. You know, like, hey, I think this is really supposed to be smart, but I don't know why. Which could be the fault of the creator, and it could be the fault of the reader. But I will, like, looking over his work, I don't see anything that I was really loved. I saw stuff mm-hmm. that I thought I was supposed to really love. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, I think it might be for certain kinds of comic book readers, maybe not for mine. It's pretty abstract.
It was an interesting little essay, you know, the de rigueur essay, although his is drawn mm-hmm. in that he explains that he was depressed living in Vancouver, walking around in basically an empty city. I guess it was a few years ago, so with me during the pandemic. But I guess when the city was empty, walking around, watching a lot of TV shows and eating, you know, and so he sort of channeled that to the story. So that's interesting. I just don't know. And I get a depressed person writing this because the character seems depressed. But I don't know what's happening here. I don't think it gives you enough information. Mm-hmm. But it's impressive. I think it's impressive as a work. I don't know that I want to read more, but I did enjoy reading it.
All right. I doubt ratings. I will read more.
Ratings. Out of five.
I'll go with my personal reaction to it. It would be a lot of three.
Okay. I'm going to give it a four only because I thought it was really well done. But again, I don't know that I want to read more of it. So that's your answer to the question of, are you sticking with it?
Probably not.
Probably not too. But again, I thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you're a patron, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Any patron can do so. But if you give it a $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like these two gentlemen or ladies or whoever they are. Farron, the one named Farron, knows the exact weight of everything.
In any measurement system?
Any measurement system.
So, like, what's that in kilograms? Mm-hmm. We then can convert. I guess if as long as you had an app, it's fine. If you have a phone, it'd be good.
Knows the exact weight of that box, that desk, that car, the piece of food.
I'm trying to think of practical applications in a day-to-day thing.
Well,
what about in... So here's the thing. My desk had a weight rating.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I don't think I'm anywhere near that, but if I added up all this stuff, how much would it be? And right. I don't know, because I didn't go through it. Farron could probably take care of that.
Farron, yeah. Farron would know it all.
That's useful. Or yeah. You know, can I get on this roller coaster? No, you can't.
You know, should you lift that box up?
No. Ooh, that's a good one. And increasingly, as time goes on, the answer is usually no. Yes. But will you? Yes. Yes, probably. I will. And then I'll have this weird pain in my shoulder that I won't go away.
Yeah, that so happens. Farron just knows all the weight.
Jordan Thill can take any technological or electronic advice and advance it one generation of technological improvement. So for example.
Explain.
I will. Take a light bulb. Mm-hmm. You have the old-fashioned tungsten light bulb.
Sure.
Pop that up to a CFL. Got a CFL light bulb? Pop it up to an LED. One generation.
But theoretically, he could keep going with it.
No. The object gets one jump.
Just one.
Up the sort of generational ladder of electronics.
I see.
Okay.
That's pretty nice.
Carburetor, fuel injection.
Does that mean he could make like your headlights into, what are the new ones like?
LEDs or xenons?
Xenons, yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know.
Combustion engine into a hybrid engine?
I think that's about right. That sounds good. But like you couldn't take like a Barracuda Hemi engine into like an electric Tesla sort of version, but yeah. Right. You can put an electric one on there. There could be drawbacks to these things, just like there's always.
And it's only technology that couldn't make you into like Rob Lowe.
No, also that's a bigger jump than one. Actually, I don't think that's true. Anyway,
patreon.com/iFanboy. You $5 higher level, get your superpower live on the show. Thanks for all those who support the show. We do appreciate it. Let's talk about Carl C's email. Carl C says, since you guys like talking about the Mafia, which doesn't exist, could you explain why Marvel Comics called them the Magia in the 70s and why they still use that term sometimes today?
Probably so they wouldn't piss anybody off and get killed.
Well, so...
I think I have an actual answer.
Well, the answer... So first of all, the term of the Magia was first used in 1965 at Marvel.
Magia is how I always thought of it.
Magia, probably. So a couple of reasons I would assume. Number one is that, well, first of all, I think Josh can confirm that the Mafia wasn't wildly well known in the 60s and 70s in terms of popular consciousness. But number two, more importantly, they were rumored to have controlled comics distribution at the time. So you don't want to piss off the people who will make your comics stop being distributed, and number three, will also kill you. So
yeah,
I mean, all this is theoretical because none of these people existed,
and it really is largely this was unknown to me, but there were hearings, you know, in the 50s and the early 60s, but the word Mafia wasn't actually used all that often. Mm-hmm. and you know, I don't know if it's famously, but you know, the Black FBI Coast. Yeah, which means our thing, which means the our thing. you know, like Hoover, you know, ran the FBI, did not believe it was a thing until the 70s, you know, and So,
but I think that it was probably different people working in printing in New York knew they were a thing because
they might not have known. I mean, yeah, I think when it comes down to it, like they probably knew the word, but it's also possible there was like a, you know, didn't really know what it meant. Like calling it the mafia might have seemed wrong, so they just gave it this other sort of made up name.
So now what's interesting is that, you know, Marvel is often tagged as the more realistic universe to DC, which is obviously ridiculous, but DC has always gone full in on like the real mafia, you know, especially in the Batman world. Whereas the Magia was always like Hammerhead was the head of the Magia. Like it was always sort of a supervillain, had a supervillain tinge to it. Not like the real, you know, like a real life mafia. So it's all interesting that the Marvel universe is always hewed towards making the mafia kind of fantastical, whereas DC's has always been very
Who's the Batman one? Alphonse or Karma?
Well, there was the Falcone's.
There you go. Karma and Falcone.
Yeah. And the Bertinelli's. And there's, you know,
really? The Bertinelli's are one?
Yeah, Helena Bertinelli.
One day at a time.
Yeah. Rob A. writes, he's got three questions. His first is, I've been thinking about this since the long lost year of 2020. Will you ever do a book split on Cosmic Odyssey? I believe I pitched this to you, Josh, last year.
Did we not do it?
No. I pitched it to you after we did the Jack Kirby book, and then we got distracted by something else. We have talked about Cosmic Odyssey on our video show.
Yeah.
But I did pitch it to Josh last year, but we got distracted by something else. It's possible.
Yeah, possible. I would put it somewhere between possible and likely. That's where I would put that.
Question two, I've also been wondering since December 2016, do Josh and Ron have a Dr. Doom Reed Richards relationship?
I hadn't thought about this, but maybe.
Who is who?
I mean, he'd have to be Doom, right? To be fair, I've always suspected that Doom is a little bit smarter than Reed Richards.
So what does that make me? The Thing?
Herbie.
Because The Thing was at college with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Ben Grimm.
I mean, you're from the Manhattan.
That's true. I wasn't a gang.
Yeah, but The Thing is not on equal footing with either of those people. You'd have to find somebody who has a, you know, the same relationship with both. It's more of a triangle, whereas, you know, The Thing is on Reed's side.
True. True.
Willie Lumpkin.
Finally, since you guys mentioned Grifter in episode 763, did you read Warren Ellis's The Wildstorm? If so, what did you think? I believe we mentioned it several times on the show. Wasn't it a pick of the week?
Rob, I don't think you listened to the show.
Yeah, I think it was.
So in that case, yeah, we totally did a book split on Comic Odyssey. Go find it. Yeah, I read every issue of The Wildstorm. I talked about it probably most of them. Yeah, I loved it. It was
super fun. Go back in the archives
and
search The Wildstorm. It's in there.
Yep.
Was it pick of the week?
It must have been at least once. If not, I still talked about it a lot, I remember. Yeah. I read it all. It was 24 of them. I read all of them. I enjoyed it. I never, you know, although go ahead, ask me right now. I don't remember a thing about it.
contact@ifanboy.com. That's where you can write in, like Carl and Rob, to get on the show. Thank you for doing so. So as I mentioned earlier, we had a new media split came out this week right behind the show in the feed, in which we spent most of the show talking about season 2 of The Mandalorian and had a good old Star Wars geek out. Good old-fashioned Star Wars geek out, and it was great. It was a lot of fun.
He's no good to me dead. This is the way.
This is the way? Mr. Walken in there.
Excuse me. Do you know the way? Oh, this
he
is the way.
He needs to get in that show. He needs to be the brother of, what's his name?
Bill Burr?
No, the German.
Oh, Werner Herzog?
Yes, his brother.
I gotta say, there's a bunch of accents or voices I wish I could do, and I wish I could do Werner Herzog.
So much.
Can't.
No one can.
I guess Paul F. Tompkins can do it.
It's hard. It's a hard one.
Yeah, but I mean, I heard a little bit, and I was like, "That's good." And my friend was like, "That's Paul F. Tompkins," and I was like, "Oh wow." It says Talksplode in January, and I guess that's possible, but I do have one booked for February. Sometimes the guests have to wait on things. I'm going to see if I can double up in that month, but I've got one scheduled, put the date on it, and I got a list. I've found that since I'm not on Twitter anymore, it's harder. That's what I've learned. I think I just got rid of everybody's spam. So if you happen to know Alan Moore.
So what's funny about our books blood in February is this is the third time mentioning it, and this is the third title we're giving it. The first time we called it Jack Kirby by Tom Scioli. The second time we called it Jack Kirby, King of Comics by Tom Scioli. The actual title of the book is Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics by Tom Scioli, and that is our February books blood.
All the words were correct. At no point did it say Jack Kirby, the boss of submarine sandwiches. We were on the right track.
King of the world, Jack Kirby. So I'm really excited to talk to Josh about that. We haven't talked about it yet, but we're going to have that happen in February, and we're very excited. It's not Cosmic Odyssey, but it's a lot of fun. And it's kind of Cosmic Odyssey.
I mean, it should be a precursor to Cosmic Odyssey.
For sure.
Yeah, I think that works.
I think we started every year with the Jack Kirby book last year. It was New Gods.
There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Oh, Dave Lincoln. Head over to iFanboy.com. You can find all of our shows. You can find that episode on the Cosmic Odyssey that we did.
It might be one of the ones not uploaded yet, but it's
possible. It'll be there. I was making a joke about there not being an audio version, but
that's the thing.
Although, you know, I should go with your clear explanations over my vague, funny, obfuscating ones. You can find all of the shows that we have done. You can go, for example, you could go into the podcast and go into special edition podcast, and you could do a little command F find of all the Talksplodes, and you will see we're in the 90s, so there's a lot of interviews that have been done over the years. And I'm very proud of that body of work. Not all of the early ones are mine. And all sorts of stuff, all the movie, all the animated stuff. Whatever it is, we've probably covered it in some way. And sometimes going back to the old version of how we talked about things, not flattering for us, but it's there. We stand by it. You'll find all the writing from all of our talented writing staff over the years as well. Just pick a topic. Like, I really want to think about Howard the Duck. You're going to find some Chimsky stuff on Howard the Duck. You're going to.
Yeah.
You can go to facebook.com/ifanboy, at ifanboy on Twitter, and at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. On Instagram, you will also find best of the week in panels and fun things on Wednesday, which, by the way, good job finding images for that on a regular basis. Connor, you can
follow. Not always easy.
No, but it's impressive. There are Tumblr accounts you can follow. C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram if you want to pretend to be friends with us. That's not super harsh. I think we're very nice people. I interact.
Are we?
I am. You don't interact with anybody.
You're the one who just said that. You just said it was fake friends. I'm just saying.
Well, that's like my. That was
the
like
army
my.
Was directed towards you.
That was like my salty sense of humor. Like, oh, don't say it. Oh, and
definitely
then
translates.
Some of the people will be like, "That's our Josh," and then some of the people are like, "That's a dick." And you're both right. You can subscribe to the YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy to keep up with the old video show reuploads. This past week, there was iFanboy Mini. That was me. It was my pick of the week, Pretty Baby Machine number one, which was a movie pitch, and a second issue never came out. And I'm angry about it. And I'd take back my pick of the week if I could, because I hate that. And iFanboy at the San Diego Comic-Con parts 1 and 2. Do you know what year that was?
2008, I think.
That's the year, man. Sure. 2008 is the 1986 of iFanboy, just in case you were curious.
Was it?
Kind of, yeah. 8 was the year.
8, 9, 10. That was the
I know, but this was the start of it. That was when we were full-time. That's when we started like doing the, you know, that was the one. We built the website up. The whole thing.
2008. If you want to go back and listen to interviews from 12 years ago of creators who won't talk about their books at all, then you can go do that. Not many.
It was late enough that we were a little better at doing interviews by that point. Like, we did them earlier than that, but we're not good.
And they're just not, honestly, they're just not great interviews because, again, they won't talk about anything. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have an interview with somebody who acts like they're in the CIA. Where are we in the script? So if you like the show, please read.
I feel like you just saw something that made you say that.
Like, no, I didn't like doing the con interviews because they didn't say anything. I liked doing the con shows because they were fun and they were goofy, but it was
not a lot of content.
It's just like, all right, well, you can read it in 3 months. Cool. Mm-hmm. If you like the show, write us a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Better yet, tell your friends, your mom, your kids, your letter carrier, from far away, from 6 feet away at least, with your masks on. It'll sound like, would you listen to the podcast? I like to listen to it. And they won't understand what you're saying, which is how a lot of these conversations go these days. So help us as best you can.
Spread I was born up. In the dark.
Oh, no. Let her carry your bane.
Times are tough.
There are international customs fees.
So that's the show this week. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
I haven't done that in a while, and I don't do that well either. That was fun. That was that therapy that we were talking about, I think.
Yep. Stay safe out there. Wash your hands. Be smart. We're not out of the woods yet.
You know where the mask goes, by the way?
Over your nose.
Over your goddamn nose. That's where it goes. I'm seeing a lot of nose slippage. There was a New York Times article said this is that the nose slippage is the new man spreading. And I was like,
What is the point then? Don't even bother.
Just take it off. Just take it off. It's fine. The hose is still on. I'm sorry, everyone. I had a moment. I had to go to the grocery store the other day. It's stressing me out. Okay, it was fun, and then we ruined it. I'll talk to everybody later.
Bye.